Welcome to the J-Pop Exchange on C-Suite Radio. I'm Sean Bird, your host for the show. Whether you're interested in entrepreneurship or employment, there are real opportunities for you in Japan. Having recently reached over 500,000 subscribers on his popular YouTube channel Only in Japan, reporter John Dobb gives valuable insight into how he created his YouTube channel, along with discussing opportunities for employment in Japan. John also discusses a variety of other topics, including his reflections on dealing with the 2011 Tohoku earthquake and tsunami, as well as sharing with us the unconventional yet practical way that he learned Japanese. We talked with John while he was on the road, hitchhiking through Japan from south to north, starting at Kyushu in the south and continuing to Hokkaido in the north.
Hi, I'm John Dobb from Only in Japan YouTube channel, and you're listening to the J-Pop Exchange with Sean Bird.
Hi, John. Thank you for your time. It's great to be able to speak with you.
Thanks, Sean. I'm actually in Hakodate right now. Just reached Hokkaido after hitchhiking, maybe like 1,800 kilometers or something like that. But I've been on the road for a month and outside here in a beautiful city park.
Sounds great. Currently, you're hitchhiking across Japan all month long. That sounds very exciting. How has the experience been?
It's been a really great experience. I did this 14 years ago from Hokkaido down to Kagoshima, and this time I'm doing it in reverse. So just that element alone makes this trip really unique. And the fact that I'm doing it again makes it pretty cool because I can see how Japan has changed over the last 14, 15 years.
Yeah. Picking up on that point, you previously hitchhiked across Japan in 2003. What inspired you to embark on a similar journey now? Is there something that you were hoping to examine or discover?
Well, back in 2003 when I first did this trip, I actually made a movie about it, but it was all filmed in standard definition, and I sort of didn't know how to make a movie. And now after 15 years of experience in the video production business, it's something that I wanted to do just for me. I wanted to document this trip. But more than that, 2003, when I did that hitchhiking trip, that's the reason why I decided to stay in Japan, because I was at a crossroads in my life. I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to stay here or go back to the United States. And after I did this trip and discovered what Japan was, I decided right then and there when I finished the trip that I wanted to stay here as long as I possibly can and call this place home. So that's sort of why I did that trip in 2003. And that's sort of what inspired me to do it now, because I feel also in my life I'm at a crossroads, because I've been YouTubing now for the last 4 years, trying to bring interesting stories to people based on my experience living in Japan. And I think I need that inspiration again for myself. I need to go and meet the people and see the country and go to places that I haven't been to for a long time. This type of trip allows me to do that. Mm-hmm. I can't do that taking the train. I can't do that taking a bus or even flying the locations for a few days. You really have to live out on the road. So this trip has inspired me to make better content for my viewers.
Previously, you mentioned to me that you find it, quote, amazing how much has changed and how much has also stayed the same. That sounds really interesting. Would you mind going into a little more detail about this?
Yeah, I've noticed that between when I first hitchhiked in 2003 and now in 2017, that Japan as a country has changed. I see this a little bit through the people who picked me up. Last time, people were stopping because they were more or less curious about foreigners. They kind of wanted to, I guess it was sort of a novelty to see somebody hitchhiking on the side of the road. Nowadays, people are stopping because they want to help me. More in general terms. And that makes me see that Japanese have had more exposure to foreigners. When I first came, there weren't that many foreign visitors from Western countries here. Japan was one of those countries that was too expensive to visit, that was really far from everything else. Now, the country has opened up. We see a lot of foreigners in Japanese entertainment. We see a lot of foreigners walking around the cities of Tokyo, and a lot more foreign visitors. So that part of it is definitely changed. And the country itself, with the 2020 Olympics coming, there's a lot of excitement in Japan. Most of that's in Tokyo, but throughout the entire country, Japanese feel that the world is watching them now. So I can see that very clearly on this trip, going from the very bottom to the very top of Japan. Everybody is excited about that.
Interesting. What brought you to Japan in the first place? And what led you to stay?
So I came here in 1998 after I finished university. And the reason why was because my college roommate encouraged me to come. I was at Ohio State University. He was my roommate who's studying Japanese. And when he finished, he came to Japan. I used to tease him because he studied Japanese and he slept on a futon. And he always had like Asian playboys in his room. He had one of those fetishes or something. So I sort of tease him about that. But after a year of traveling myself, and I hadn't been to that side of the world, he encouraged me and said, look, if you want to see this side of Asia, the best thing to do would be to come and teach English. So the first 7 years I was in Japan, I was teaching English to children. And that's an experience that kept me in Japan for 7 years, the first 7 years, before I went on that hitchhiking trip in 2003 that changed my life. So that led me to come to Japan, and it was the hitchhiking trip that really kept me to stay. And it opened my eyes to what this country is all about, what this country stands for in its people. And not just the people in Tokyo, but throughout the entire country. And that's why I'm still here.
And what inspired you to create your YouTube channel only in Japan?
Well, since 2008, I've been working on a couple of shows for NHK World, which is the national TV channel, like PBS in the United States. And NHK World makes programming for the rest of the world from Japan, but I found that a lot of the content was lacking in the entertainment department. They would tell you about Japan, but really wouldn't do it in a way that was, fun? without sounding condescending, but it's, yeah.
Hi, I'm Colin.
Oh, okay. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Wow, awesome, I get to meet you. I was telling my wife that.
Hello. Oh, hello.
I meet you like a couple of days, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, here we are. Yeah.
So how's it going?
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
I've been on the road.
Yeah, I'm going back to on the road tomorrow. So I've been here for a couple of days, and one more day taking a little bit of a break. Weather's been good, hasn't it?
Yeah. But
we'll pause for a moment while John speaks to a fan.
Yeah. I don't want to bother you.
Anymore. Not at all. Thanks for saying
back
hi.
Back to your job.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
I'm sorry, Sean.
No problem. It's great that you get recognized.
Okay, I'm actually sitting in a park in Hakodate, and somebody who watches the show came and said hi from Singapore. So that's nice. It feels good because on this trip, although I've been hitchhiking alone for the last over 30 days now, it's nice because people who watch the show stop and say hi. And when they do, I get this warmth that makes me feel as though that while I'm making this YouTube show on the road, I don't feel like I'm alone. And that's a really good feeling to me. The warmth of the people who watch the show, especially when they come to Japan, because that's part of the show. And that's going back to the original question, why I decided to make only in Japan. In 2008, I started working with NHK World, which is the national TV company here in Japan. It's the public broadcaster like PBS, but it is the biggest TV channel in the world. And the content that they make for the international audience is produced by Japanese, and it's sort of, two-dimensional in a way. It's sort of boring. There's not enough entertainment in it. And I thought I would take my experience living here for a long time and use that to make a production, because I already knew how to do video production. And I took the experiences that I had from NHK World and kind of made it into the channel that you see today. So that's what really inspired me to try to do a better, more interesting show produced by a non-Japanese in a sort of TV format.
That's very interesting. And also, out of curiosity, how did you learn Japanese?
Yeah, I didn't... When I came to Japan, I didn't know any Japanese at all. I didn't know konnichiwa, which is the basic hello. I really didn't start to learn it until about the year 2000, which is 2 years later. Because when you're teaching English, everybody wants to speak English to you, so you're not really encouraged to start to learn the native language, the local language. But it wasn't until I started learning Japanese that the country started to open up to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess it would be the same in any country around the world. When you start to learn the local language, you start to learn the culture and the people, and you start to make friends and see things in a different way. And I learned Japanese quite simply. The first step was to get some flashcards and write down the katakana and the hiragana alphabets. First the katakana and the hiragana, and I would study them on the train. And every time I rode the subway, I would be able to look around on the signs on the subway and start to pick out the katakana and hiragana that I was studying from the flashcards, so it would stick in my mind mentally. After that, I could start to read menus, and I was more encouraged to learn kanji and then the verb structure, which is, for me, was mostly verbs in the beginning, and then I built nouns around the verbs. And then from there, I learned the structure for speaking. And my teachers, this is sort of interesting, my teachers were not, you know, a school. I didn't go to any Japanese school to learn. I went to the donut shop, Mr. Donuts here in Japan, and I would talk with old ladies in the towns that I lived in.
Hmm.
And they would be the best teachers, because old ladies are so nice, so friendly, and they're very strict in the sense that they always correct my mistakes. And that was the most practical way to learn it, because you'll learn it naturally that way. It's hard to learn it if you're in a school, if you're in another country, because you don't use it every day. You don't learn the idioms, you don't learn the usage, and you're not surrounded by the culture. So that's the biggest challenge, and the reason why you'd want to come to Japan to learn the languages just for that, because a lot of the language, like all languages, has to do with the culture, and being here is such an advantage to learning Japanese.
I believe you were in Japan during the earthquake and tsunami in March 2011. Would you mind telling us something about what the experience was like for you? Would you mind sharing some of your reflections upon it?
Yeah, I was here during the great Tohoku earthquake. I was in Tokyo on March 11th, 2011. I remember it happened in the morning, and I was editing video, and the building shook. First there was a rumble, and I knew that it was not a normal rumble. It's just something that you feel welling up underneath your feet. You can tell there's an earthquake on the way. Usually you get 2 or 3 seconds and you know it's coming. And this was a mighty big rumble. Just a feeling that, yeah, this is going to be a big one. But I had no way to anticipate the size of that earthquake. It literally knocked over my TV, it knocked over my books, it knocked over all of the wine glasses. All of the glasses on a shelf that I have in my house, it knocked over, my computer, everything, candles, everything that was standing on shelves was on the floor. And I thought I was gonna die.
Wow.
You don't know what to do in a situation like that. There's nowhere you can run that's safe. After that was going, my heart was beating so fast, and my first reaction was to call people that I know to make sure that they were okay. And I was getting phone calls as well. I got on the internet to find out what was going on, and the local TV, NHK, had the broadcast of the earthquake playing, what had happened and the size and the magnitude of it. Even the NHK studio, when they were live streaming, they were showing the earthquake. I mean, there were tremors and aftershocks. And there was the second aftershock that scared me the most. A couple of minutes later, it felt just as big as the original earthquake. And I remember I had a hamster at the time. I grabbed my hamster out of his cage, and the two of us ran outside to the street. And it was the earthquake was still going. I live on the sixth floor, so I ran down the steps. Elevator had stopped. And standing on the road during the first aftershock, it felt like I was riding a bus in the city. It felt like I was, you know, the ground wasn't stable pretty much, and I sat down on the road because I couldn't stand up. That's how much the ground was shaking. And you could see the phone lines in Japan. The phone lines are up on poles along the street, and those are swinging back and forth violently. The buildings are swinging back and forth violently.
Wow.
And then for the next 4 or 5 months after that earthquake, every 5 minutes there was an aftershock, it seemed like. I was getting seasick because it was swaying so much. You'd look out the window and you'd see the buildings all moving with the earthquake, and it felt like you were on a boat. I went down to Osaka for a few days just to stabilize, because the earthquakes weren't happening down there, and tried to get over this seasickness, and I came back to Japan a few days later. We had a food shortage after the earthquake as well. Shelves were all empty. There wasn't any food because people panicked and just bought a lot of stuff. The supply chain was broken because factories were closed in places that made things like bread and vegetables and other daily necessities. They were down, so we didn't get supplies into the city. So there was about a week or two where we really had to buckle down and help each other and the community to get food like eggs and milk and basic necessities. We had to share some of that. Mm,
amazing.
That was new to me. That's when the communities in Japan, you really see them come together. And that's when, I was really happy to be a part of the country during that time, because I saw the people come together. Just like after, I guess it sort of reminds me after the 2001, the terrorist attack in the Twin Towers in New York. You saw the New York community come together, and people were, although very, very sad, were proud to be New Yorkers standing strong after such a horrific event. And it was the same thing in Japan after the earthquake. You saw the country come together, and people really stood together as a community. And that was a good feeling to me. That's one reason why I stayed. A lot of my friends left Japan after the earthquake, but I stayed because I felt that closeness to the community in that time, and went up to Tohoku to volunteer and see what I could do to help for a couple of weeks.
Switching gears, what music and television in Japan do you like? Do you have any favorite musical groups or musical artists? Any favorite television shows or movies?
Yeah, I don't really watch a lot of Japanese TV. It plays in the background, but I don't focus on anything in particular. When I came to Japan on Sunday, I would watch two shows in particular that were anime. They were, but family-based anime, not the kind of anime that you might think of when you first hear the word anime. The first one is called Sazae-san, which has been running for decades. And the other one is Chibi Maruko-chan, which has been going, I think, for 35 years now. And these two anime dramas on Fuji TV Play, it's basically family situations in Japan, and that's where I learned a lot of my Japanese as well, not just from the grandmas and Mr. Donuts, but also from TV shows like animes from like Sazae-san and Chibi Maruko-chan. So that's pretty much all that I watched. In terms of music, I don't listen to a lot of J-pop. I knew a couple of J-pop artists that I used to teach English to when I lived in Tokyo, but I'm not going to tell you their names because I sort of promised I would never talk too much about that. But since you asked me about music, yeah, I'm not too big into the J-pop scene. In terms of the media and the culture, Japanese horror is something that interests me. Japanese horror is more psychological in a way, whereas in the U.S. they show the blood and the guts a lot. In Japan, it's more psychological. And if it comes to Japanese movies, horror is one genre that Japan does better than anybody else, I think. It's just, it scares you deep to your core. And that's even more frightening than showing guts and blood and stuff like that.
Are there any clubs or venues that you would recommend visitors to Japan check out?
Not really. If you come to Japan, there's lots of clubs and the nightlife is vibrant. There's something for everybody. If you like clubbing, Roppongi is probably what all the guidebooks say. The Roppongi as a neighborhood is changing really fast. There used to be a lot of, like dodgy clubs that you would go into. People would pull you into the clubs, and there were a lot of just foreigners living in Japan kind of stuff. But the neighborhood is starting to change with the 2020 Olympics coming. Tokyo, on the whole, is starting to clean up a lot of the black marks that were seen, and Roppongi was something that the American Embassy warned visitors about going there and doing the nightlife. So Roppongi is changing a little bit, so the nightlife is going to be evolving in Japan. So that much I can tell you. As we get closer to the 2020 Olympics, the nightlife in Japan is also going to get more regulated, more robust, I think more fun.
Uh-huh. What I meant was, are there places, live house venues that emphasize musical acts and up-and-coming groups?
A lot of people think of the big areas when it comes to live houses, music places, like Shibuya, Harajuku, Shinjuku. You know, the places around the Yamanote line in the center of Tokyo. But the best places with a real indie vibe are out of the center of the city. Shimokitazawa, or Shimokita, is really good. I'd say half the town there is populated by musicians. Marty Friedman, do you know Marty Friedman? He used to be a guitarist for Megadeth.
Mm-hmm.
He lives here in Japan and lives in that neighborhood. It attracts all kinds of people, and it has a small neighborhood feel to it, which attracts me to that place. I think that if you go there at night, you won't have to find the live houses. They'll just find you.
Wow.
That's the kind of place that you don't want to miss out on. Other than Shimokita, I'd say Koenji has a pretty good feel to it when it comes to live music.
As far as visiting Japan, is there a time of the year or season that you would recommend?
Right now, one of the reasons why I decided to hitchhike now in April is because I wanted to follow the cherry blossoms that start down in Kyushu and follow them up going to Hokkaido. And I've been able to do that. Here in Hokkaido, though, I'm a few days early, I think. But for the most part, to the middle of the country, I was able to see it. So April and May are two of the best months to come. The other one would be September. And I recommend September because the summer's way too hot. It's like a sauna in Tokyo, so I can't recommend summer. But September, it cools off, that humidity goes away, and it's really pleasant. The autumn, too, is really nice as well, especially if you like Japanese onsen or spas. It's when the autumn colors turn and you see that and sitting in a bath outside somewhere in the countryside. Just, I don't think there's anything better than that.
Sounds great. Are there any cities or rural areas that you would recommend people visit?
Yeah, I mean, I think you should get outside of Tokyo and Kyoto and Osaka and Hiroshima. Those four, and well, you should go to Hiroshima, but you should get out of the main cities that everybody else goes to visit and visit one of the prefectural capitals. If you want to visit a city, visit one of the smaller ones to get a sense of what Japan is really like, because Tokyo is not really a representation of what the country is. And when it comes to the rural countryside places, if you look at the show Only in Japan, I'm going to go back to that because I've highlighted some local rural towns, give you an idea of what it's like there. It's totally different, and the people are friendlier, people are more relaxed, the food is better. I think Tokyo has a lot of options, but the food is better, the ingredients are fresher. And there's not as many choices, which is actually a good thing. You can have too many choices in Tokyo. When you're outside of Tokyo, the choices are less, and it's easier to find the good places, I think.
Sounds really interesting. Regarding living in Japan, do you have any advice as far as deciding where to live and how to find a place to live?
Well, if you're interested in living in Japan, I would say Tokyo is probably the best place because that's where a lot of jobs are for foreign people, that especially if you can't speak Japanese. If you can't speak Japanese, it's going to be extremely hard for you to find a job because essentially, unless you have that visa, and I can't tell you how to get a visa, but unless you have a visa to come here, that means I don't know how you find a job, because what can you do that Japanese can't? You have to find an industry like that. And that is mostly in Tokyo and Osaka. If it comes to teaching English, though, I'd say, you know, don't stay in Tokyo. Don't limit yourself to that. Go outside of Tokyo, and you'll be able to find a job more easily if you approach businessmen that have these English schools. And yeah, you can maybe even get a chance to help the school grow if you make a commitment with them. There's so many opportunities if you look outside of Tokyo. But you have to find a occupation that Japanese can't do, first of all, and you have to work here legally. I don't know how you can do that unless you maybe make a trip here first and line something up.
Mm-hmm.
So no particular city to live, just research it. My favorite city to live in, though, was Hiroshima, because it's a lot smaller than Tokyo, but it seems to have everything in the center, and that makes it really a livable city.
Very interesting. In conclusion, is there anything you'd like to talk about that we haven't mentioned so far?
Japan is a really amazing country that I'm seeing right now hitchhiking. That's a lot bigger than it looks on the map, and there's no other way to see it other than to get out here on a road. So if you have a driver's license, you might consider renting a car and going out and taking a road trip that way. It might even be better than taking the train, and do things that are different than what other people are doing. Don't do what the guidebooks say only that, but you know, do something off the beaten track. And that's one of the reasons why I'm hitchhiking. And I hope you do to check out the show and see some of the adventures that I'm having, because my gosh, it's things happen when you're out here on the road. But in conclusion, how can I put this in a nutshell? Well, Japan is an amazing country, and if you've been listening to Sean's show, the J-Pop Exchange, then you probably know a little bit more about the country as a result of that. I say, you know, if you come to Japan, renting a car might be a good idea. Just see the country in a different way. Get outside of the mainstream areas and find a place where you can really get to know the country, and that would be maybe prefectural capitals, and from there branching off to a mountain town or something on the seaside and spending a few days there. I think that's a great way for you to get to know the country, and when you do that, you're gonna get to appreciate the music a lot more, and the culture and the food and all the things that are just really interesting about this country.
Awesome. I think you definitely got us interested in Japan. Thank you again, John, for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with us. Good luck with everything.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
John spoke a little bit about one of his favorite anime series known as Chibi Maruko-chan. Right now, I'd like to take this opportunity to share with you some great music from one of the most recent theatrical adaptations, composed by Nobuyuki Nakamura.
Hi, I'm Nobuyuki Nakamura, and you're listening to the J-Pop Exchange with Sean Bird.
For the J-Pop Exchange on C-Suite Radio, this is Sean Bird signing off. Take care and see you next week.